Good afternoon, and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun Sound of Arizona. Thanks for joining us from the July issue of Sun Lake Splash, Planting Tips for the Crazy July Heat by Dennett Hunnell. Remember, monsoon season is on its way, and many of our desert plants love the added humidity, but it will get windy and can deplete the soil and flower beds. A good thing to do in July is to add iron to your soil, and if you can stand it, this is a good time to add manure so it will bake into the soil, making it rich and ready for fall planting. Manure helps soil resist wind erosion by binding loose particles together and keeps it from blowing away in possible upcoming windy weather. If you haven't already, now is a good time to plant lantana, a valley staple, vincas, colorful and able to handle triple digits, palms, zinnias, vibrant colors, native to Mexico, perfect for Phoenix, and gomphrena, clover-like, globe-shaped, long-lasting flowers, thrives in intense heat, and lastly, most succulents. Plant during the evening or early morning and water lightly. Afterward, apply some sort of a shade cloth for the next couple of days until the plants adjust to sun. A simple idea. Staple half of an old pillowcase onto two thin dowel bars and plant in the ground over the new plants. Water in the early morning or after sunset and do so deeply around the plants directly into the soil, keeping water off the actual plants so they won't burn or bear too much weight. Also, spreading some mulch, straw, wood chips, or compost will retain moisture, keeping plants cooler. Placing broken pieces of wet, unglazed clay in the dirt will allow a slow release of moisture to the roots. But if using broken clay, be sure to use gloves. The next time you boil pasta, steam veggies, or boil some eggs, don't pour the water down the drain. Let it cool and pour it over your plants, both outdoors and indoors. The water will have useful nutrients such as calcium to keep the struggling plants healthy, strong, and green. Watch for small pests as they are desperately seeking water this time of year as well. And as always, make sure someone knows you are working in the yard. Wear a hat, sunscreen, and stay hydrated, drinking plain water and electrolytes. From southwestgardener.com, July, What to Do in the Desert Garden by Deanne Albin. In the desert southwest, July means the arrival of monsoon storms, which bring higher humidity and much-needed rain. Discover what gardening activities you should and shouldn't do and things to watch out for during this changeable month. July in the Southwest Garden is a month of changes. The monsoon officially begins June 15th, but the first rains usually arrive in early July. You may or may not find the monsoon season thrilling. I'm one of those desert dwellers who loves this time of year. Monsoon storms bring welcome rainfall, humidity, and cloud cover, all a great relief for your plants. But it's not all good news for gardeners. Monsoon storms can bring flooding, hail, dust storms, and damaging wind. And an increase in moisture leads to more insect pests, plant diseases, and weeds. And some years, the monsoon is a nonsoon that brings the wind, but very little rain. All these changes mean changes in gardening tasks this month as well. Here's a July weather outlook. While the average temperature doesn't change much from June to July, the average humidity and rainfall increase considerably. This may feel less comfortable for you, but your plants will love it. July weather averages for Tucson: high temperature 100 degrees Fahrenheit, low temperature 75, precipitation 2.45 inches, relative humidity 40%, UV index 11.2, wind 15 miles an hour. July weather averages for Phoenix: high temperature 107, low temperature 84 degrees Fahrenheit, precipitation 0.98, relative humidity 27%, UV index 10.3, and wind 8 miles per hour. What to do in the garden in July? July is a pretty quiet month in the garden since it's not time to plant, prune, or fertilize. However, you need to continue to keep your plants hydrated, protect them from too much sun, and watch for pests. Continue to be prepared for heat waves and be ready for storms and subsequent storm damage. Here's a snapshot of the activities you can do this month and those you should stop doing. Sow summer wildflower seeds. Water. Fertilize potted plants. Watch for iron chlorosis. Watch for pests and weeds. Prepare for storms. don't plant most plants, don't prune most plants, and don't fertilize most plants. What you can plant in July, but should you? July is not a good time to plant desert landscape plants. Most plants will be much happier when planted in the fall, and there will be less work and worry for you too. I find nursing new plants through the summer to be a stress I'd rather avoid. Some landscape professionals contend that during the monsoon, with its rain and higher humidity, is a good time to plant native and deciduous trees, palms, and summer flowering shrubs, such as Texas Ranger or Lantana. However, I consider this a gamble, since some years the monsoon is a dud that brings little heat relief and little to no rain. Heat-loving cactus and succulents can be planted or transplanted now, but it's not ideal. If you do, cover them with shade cloth for the duration of the summer to prevent sun scald, especially if they are from a nursery or you don't know their current orientation. But if you get the urge to grow something new, sow some summer wildflower seeds, which germinate in response to the monsoon rains. Try to get them in the ground before the rains begin. These plants grow fast and will bloom this summer. Here are some places that sell and ship desert wildflower seeds, including monsoon seed mixes, which contain favorites such as Arizona poppy, blanket flower, and desert zinnia. You can also start sunflowers from seed now. You can choose between growing wild sunflowers or one of the many sunflower cultivars. Summer watering tips. You can continue to water on the same schedule that you used in June. However, when or if the summer rains come, you can skip the next scheduled watering anytime you receive a half inch of rain or more. Having a rain gauge is invaluable for keeping track of your rainfall. I've tried many types of rain gauges throughout my decades of gardening. Glass and plastic will crack from freezes, uncommon, or hail, common. The past few years, I relied on this silicone rain gauge, which has held up to all types of weather, including severe hailstorms. If you don't have a rain gauge, you can check rainfall totals near you at the University of Arizona's rainlog.org. This is especially helpful if you live around Tucson, where most of the data is collected, and somewhat helpful if you live elsewhere in Arizona. If you live in Maricopa County, check out the county's rainfall data page. Most potted annuals need watering daily. If you're watering any plant with a hose, always check the water temperature first. Water from a hose can be hot enough to damage your plants, especially if you water later in the day. Assured cool water is one of the many reasons the best time of day to water is in the morning. And while you've got your hose out, if you haven't had any rain for a while, give your plants a quick shower to remove poor clogging dust and prevent dust-loving spider mites. If you haven't already done so, give your irrigation system a good once-over. This is especially important if you travel during the summer. Irrigation system problems tend to crop up when you go out of town. Ask me how I know this. With monsoon storms come power outages. If you experience a power outage, check your irrigation controller and reset if needed. Besides collecting water in my rain barrel, once the humidity goes up, I also collect AC condensate, an overlooked source of free gray water. Learn more about collecting and using AC condensate water here. What to fertilize? Desert landscape plants should not be fertilized in July. It further stresses plants by encouraging new growth, which is easily burned by the intense summer sun. The exception is potted plants. Most potted plants benefit from a dilute solution of fertilizer every 2 weeks during the summer. Watch for iron chlorosis. Iron deficiency sometimes shows up in the summer. The telltale sign of iron chlorosis is yellow leaves with distinctly green veins. Desert soils contain iron, but it's in a form that some plants can't use, leading to deficiency. Iron chlorosis is especially common in non-native plants, such as citrus, hibiscus, bottlebrush, and gardenia. Native plants have developed ways to absorb the iron they need from alkaline soils. If you have any plants showing signs of iron chlorosis, now is a good time to treat them. What to prune? While it's okay to remove any damaged branches from trees and shrubs, July generally is not a good time to prune. Pruning further stresses your plants by exposing new areas to the sun and stimulating new growth. However, It's not a bad time to prune native trees such as mesquites and Palo Verdes. They may drop some sap, but heal quickly during the hot weather. If you have trees with heavy canopies and you are concerned about storm damage, please have an arborist trim your trees, not a guy with a truck and a chainsaw. Deadheading spent flowers, especially annuals and potted plants, encourages new flowers and is a nice but not necessary activity in summer heat. Don't feel obligated if you'd rather not work in the heat. Watch for garden pests. An increase in moisture leads to an increase in insects, plant diseases, and weeds. Watch for insect infestations on plants. Plants that have been stressed by heat and drought, or that have been overwatered, are more likely to harbor insect pests. Some of the most common insect pests you may notice on your landscape plants this month include ants, aphids, cochineal, crickets, hornworms, leaf roller moth caterpillars, mosquitoes, Palo Verde borers, and spider mites. Check around your yard for standing water that could harbor mosquitoes. Empty any pots, saucers, buckets, or any other forgotten nooks that hold water after rains. If you have standing water you can't empty, add mosquito bits, which will kill their larvae. If you collect rainwater, keep it covered. If you notice a cochineal scale infestation on your prickly pear cactus, hit it with a hard spray of water. That should be all you need to do to get it under control. Yellow bells are subject to damage from Tachoma leaf roller moth caterpillars, which skeletonize the leaves. If you have an otherwise healthy plant, consider coexisting with them. They turn into moths that are important pollinators and food source for other wildlife. The damage they cause is temporary and only cosmetic. If you feel they are overwhelming your shrub, prune off the worst areas or use the jet spray on your hose to dislodge them. Spraying insecticide, soap, or BT is largely ineffective because the caterpillars are tightly wrapped in leaves and protective webbing. Upcoming gardening events in July. While the number of outdoor garden events tapers off in July, there are still numerous gardening classes and activities to attend, many of which are online. There's always something new to learn about gardening. You can find an up-to-date list of gardening-related events in our Tucson Gardening Event Guide. If you live in Tucson, be sure to check out these ongoing evening events now through August. You may have similar festivities near you. Tohono O'Chul's Chilling at the Chul, Arizona Sonora Desert Museum's Cool Summer Nights, and Tucson Botanical Garden's $5 Fridays. Don't live in Tucson? Look for online classes. You can participate in these no matter where you live. Here's an article that appeared in the Arizona Republic. Yes, Arizona has ticks. Here's where and what to do by Tiffany Acosta. Ticks are tiny blood-feeding arachnids more closely related to spiders than insects, and despite their size, they can carry a big reputation. These hitchhiking pests latch on to animals and people, feeding on blood and sometimes transmitting diseases such as Lyme disease and Rocky Mountain spotted fever. According to the CDC, tick-borne illnesses have been increasing for years, and warmer temperatures are one factor helping ticks expand into new areas and remain active for longer periods of the year. In fact, CDC data show tick-related emergency room visits and tick-borne disease reports have climbed significantly since 2017, as changing weather patterns create more favorable conditions for ticks in many parts of the country. So is that bad news for Arizona, the hottest state in the nation? Maybe, or maybe not. While warmer temperatures can help ticks survive and spread in some regions, Arizona's extreme desert heat also can work against them. Ticks need moisture to survive, and triple-digit temperatures combined with very low humidity can be tough on many species. That said, Arizona is not tick-free. Ticks can still be found in higher elevations, shaded areas, neighborhoods, hiking trails, and anywhere wildlife or pets roam. Here's everything you need to know about ticks and how to know if you have Lyme disease. Are there ticks in Arizona? Yes, Arizona has ticks. The most common is the brown dog tick, which thrives in warm urban areas and can even complete its full life cycle indoors, often infesting homes, kennels, or garages. We talked to Deborah Hansen, Associate Research Professor for the Biodesign Center for Applied Structural Discovery at ASU. Cheesa ticks are commonly associated with wooded areas, mountains, and higher elevations where vegetation and wildlife are abundant. Ticks are more prevalent in northern Arizona in areas with brushy vegetation and where there are hosts such as small mammals, birds, and deer. This includes forests, grasslands, and riparian areas. In certain higher elevation or vegetated areas, you'll also find the Rocky Mountain wood tick, which can transmit Rocky Mountain spotted fever and Colorado tick fever. Less commonly, the western black-legged tick has been documented in pockets of northern Arizona, particularly in wooded highland areas. The species can carry Borrelia bacteria, which causes Lyme disease. Though there aren't as many ticks in Metro Phoenix as in the wetter, more wooded regions of Arizona, urban residents do report finding ticks, especially on pets. Is it too hot for ticks in Arizona? Ticks are present in Arizona, but many people assume the desert heat eliminates them. In reality, while extreme summer temperatures can reduce tick activity in exposed areas, ticks survive by seeking shade, leaf litter, brush, tall grass, and areas where wildlife and pets travel. They're most active when temperatures are warm rather than scorching and when they can find enough humidity to avoid drying out. Do you have to worry about ticks in Arizona? While Arizona is not considered one of the nation's worst states for ticks, residents and visitors should not assume they are absent. The risk is lower than in many humid regions, but ticks remain a real concern, especially for pet owners and outdoor enthusiasts. Is Lyme disease in Arizona? The risk of contracting Lyme disease in Arizona is low, but not zero. What's fascinating about Lyme disease is a lot of the misinformation. Depending on the people or the practitioners that you're seeing, they will say, oh, Arizona's a dry climate, we don't have a lot of ticks. It's not very common, said Sarah Schlichty, patient care educator at Invita Medical Center in Scottsdale. The reality is ticks travel on all sorts of birds and deer and rabbits, and none of those animals know when they're crossing state lines. So there's certain areas that are more endemic, but the reality is it's everywhere. In Arizona, tick-borne diseases that are more commonly reported than Lyme disease include Rocky Mountain spotted fever and tick-borne relapsing fever. How common is Lyme in Arizona? Lyme disease is not common in Arizona. Most confirmed Lyme disease cases in Arizona are believed to have been acquired during travel to more affected regions, such as the Northeast, Midwest, or Pacific Northwest. While some ticks in Arizona can carry Rocky Mountain spotted fever or tick-borne relapsing fever, Lyme disease is not considered a major public health concern in the state. According to the CDC, states such as Pennsylvania, New York, Wisconsin, and Massachusetts report thousands of cases each year. Arizona typically sees only a handful annually. How can you tell if a tick bite is giving you Lyme disease? The odds of contracting Lyme disease from a tick bite depend on the type of tick, geographic location, and the duration the tick has been attached. If bitten by a tick in a high-risk area, and the tick is attached for more than 36 hours, the chances of contracting Lyme disease range from approximately 1 in 5 to 1 in 3. If the tick is removed within 36 hours, the risk drops significantly. Hansen said that even tiny tick larvae and nymphs pose a risk. Due to their size, perhaps as small as a poppy seed, they may go unnoticed when they bite. You don't feel a bite, and you don't get itchy right after being bit, so it's not like a mosquito bite, and you don't hear it like a mosquito. It's only if you look all over your body and see a tick on your skin. They would stay on your skin for maybe a couple of days before they fall off, Hansen said. So how do you recover from Lyme disease? Lyme disease generally does not go away, and the majority of people with Lyme disease recover with appropriate treatment. Those who receive antibiotics within 3 months of infection generally respond well. Uncertainty arises for those whose symptoms persist beyond this time frame. It's at post 3 months that some don't respond to the treatment, and whether the person has a bacterial pathogen in their body or is suffering from some other type of downstream effects, that's where a lot of the controversy is, Hansen said. That's where we ask, is it really Lyme disease or is it some sort of post-treatment Lyme disorder? Everyone's immune response varies. Some people have terrible symptoms. They can go from neurological issues or inflammation of the heart or virus in the joints. Schlichty said doctors at Invita advise patients that Lyme disease could be detectable in their body all their lives. The focus is on managing symptoms and reducing infection loads. A lot of it is symptomatic, and it takes a long time to heal the nervous system, Schlichty said. And those of you who are regular listeners to this show know we feature stories each week from the terrific book, Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. This story is called Lilacs for Mother's Day. It was written by Ken Weber, and there's a quote here from Ann Landers. The true measure of an individual is how he treats a person who can do him absolutely no good. Lilacs for Mother's Day. The family had just moved to Rhode Island, and the young woman was feeling homesick that Sunday. It was Mother's Day, and her own mother was 800 miles away in Ohio. She called home that morning to say Happy Mother's Day. Her mother had mentioned how cheery and colorful the yard was now that spring had arrived. And as they talked, the young woman could almost smell the tantalizing aroma of the purple flowers hanging on the big lilac bush just outside her mother's door. Later, when she told her husband how she missed those lilacs, he popped right up from his chair. Let's go get some. I know where we can find all you want. Get the kids and come on. So off they went, driving into the sparkling May countryside, up past the villages and new housing developments, past the abandoned apple orchards, back to where trees and brush have devoured old homesteads. When they stopped, dense thickets of cedars and junipers crowded the roadway on both sides. There wasn't a lilac bush in sight. Come with me, said the man. Right over that hill is an old cellar hole from somebody's farm of years ago, and there are lilacs all around it. I know the man who owns this land, and he said I could poke around here any time. I'm sure he wouldn't mind if we pick a few lilacs. Before they got halfway up the hill, the fragrance of the lilacs drifted down to them, and the kids started running. Soon, the mother was so excited, she too began running. When she reached the top, she stopped in amazement. There, far from view of passing motorists, were towering lilac bushes, so laden with the huge cone-shaped flower clusters they almost bent double. Smiling with delight, the woman ran to the nearest bush and buried her face in the flowers, drinking in the fragrance and the memories it recalled. While the man examined the cellar hole and tried to explain to the children what the house must have looked like and where the fields were, the woman slowly drifted among the lilacs. Carefully, she chose a branch here, another one there, and clipped them with her husband's pocket knife. She was in no hurry, relishing each blossom as if it were a rare and delicate treasure. Finally, though, they climbed back over the hill and returned to their car for the drive home. For miles, while the kids chattered and the man drove, the woman sat in silence, surrounded by her flowers. Her smile was now one of contentment, and in her eyes was a faraway look. When they were within 3 miles of home, she suddenly shouted to her husband, "Stop the car! Stop right here!" The man slammed on the brakes. Before he could ask why she wanted to stop, the woman was out of the car and hurrying up a grassy slope with the boughs of lilacs. At the top of the hill was a nursing home. Because it was such a beautiful spring day, many patients were outdoors, strolling with relatives or sitting on the porch. The young woman went straight to the end of the porch, where an elderly lady was sitting in her wheelchair, alone, head bowed. Across the railing went the flowers into the lap of the old woman. She lifted her head and smiled. For a few moments, the two women chatted, both aglow with happiness, and then the young woman turned and ran back to her family. As the car pulled away, the woman in the wheelchair waved and clutched the lilacs to her bosom. Inside the car, the kids asked, "Mom, who was that? Why did you give her our flowers? Is she somebody's mother?" The mother said no, she didn't know the old woman. She'd never seen her before. But it was Mother's Day, and she seemed so alone, and who wouldn't be cheered by flowers? And besides, she added, "I have all of you, and I still have my mother, even if she is far away. That woman needed those flowers more than I did." That satisfied the kids, but not the husband. The next day, he purchased half a dozen young lilac bushes and planted them around their yard. And several times since then, he has added some more. "I know. I was that man. The young mother was, and is, my wife. And now, Every May, our own yard is fragrant with lilacs. And every Mother's Day, our kids gather purple bouquets for their mother just as she gathered them that first year. And every year, I remember that smile on a lonely old woman's face and the kindness that put it there. That's called Lilacs for Mother's Day, written by Ken Weber, one of the many stories that make up Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. And that's the Green Thumb Show for this week for Sun Sounds Radio. I'm Lee Murray, your reader. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week and a terrific 4th of July weekend. And we'll be talking with you soon.